very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07, and you're tuned to Midday Matters here on 89.1 FM WBOI. I'm Sean Beter. Very glad to be with you on this Monday afternoon. And with me in studio, because it's Monday, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Bob, thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Today we're talking about health insurance exchanges and how they will change the face of healthcare in Indiana. And we do want to hear from you today. If you have a question or comment for our panelists, the number is 260-452-1185. Of course, you can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. We're at Midday Matters. Joining us in studio for the hour, State Representative Matt Lehman. Representative Lehman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Sean.
We also have IPFW medical ethicist Abe Schwab in studio. Mr. Schwab, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be here.
And on the phone calling in, it's Eric Wright. He's the director of the Center for Health Policy at IUPUI. Mr. Wright, thank you for being with us as well.
No problem.
Now, we were talking kind of before the show got going here. There really are, when you talk about the health insurance exchange in, as it pertains to Indiana, a lot more questions, really, than we have answers right now. Representative Lehman, I want to start with you. What's your outlook on the situation as it stands now? And maybe I'll back up a little bit and ask you, what's a health insurance exchange?
Well, let's start maybe at that 30,000-foot level, and that is when the Affordable Care Act passed it, there was a portion in there that would allow for states to set up an exchange. And really what that is kind of an alternative delivery method. Mm-hmm. And that is presently, if you want to buy health insurance, you have a couple of ways to do that. You can go to a local agent. You can go through a broker. You can go online. There's several methods. This is just adding one more. The difference is, the exchange would meet some specific definitions that would allow carriers to put one of their products out there on the exchange. And then the intent of it would be to allow people who are maybe uninsured, have issues with from a cost standpoint, that allows them to go onto the exchange and be able to buy this with some form of a subsidy and to help pay for part of that premium. So it, in a sense, it's just, I would look at it as one more delivery method to health insurance with a twist, and that is that the government's a lot more involved in that.
Eric Wright, what Mr. Lehman is describing here, I've heard it described various ways. One way was like an Expedia for health insurance, or an Orbitz or a Travelocity, basically, for health insurance. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I think the major difference between what Mr. Lehman said and I think what the vision is, in fact, it would largely be an online portal or an online marketplace. I think very few people are thinking there would be sort of an office, if you will, to sell these kinds of products, like much like you find through an insurance broker, although the law will require states, if they choose to set up an exchange, to also make sure that there are what are called patient navigators available to folks to help sort out the options, because as most everybody knows, health insurance is not a simple product to understand.
And Abe Schwab, I truer words never spoken there. Do you see this as a way to make health insurance easier? I mean, based on what's kind of the initial vision anyway, are folks going to be able to understand their insurance maybe a little bit better with a system like this?
I think that's the hope. I don't know. It's a question of what actually the product looks like at the end. One point I'd like to emphasize is that the exchanges won't be offering a government-run health insurance option. Like this is, as it's implied by what's been said, this is a way for private insurers to make connections to individual customers or small business customers. And so this doesn't add a new insurance plan from the government, but either federal or state necessarily, but it does actually make it so that the individual private market insurers are able to connect to individual customers and small businesses, and it does so. It allows them to choose levels of care, so they can choose their actuarial value is a big term, and they can choose different levels of care that they're looking for, and then compare products among private insurers.
So everything from just a basic plan that covers just a general trip to the doctor to a Cadillac style plan, or
they don't actually put it in those terms. I mean, there's a number of different levels. It starts at the bronze level, which is they do bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. Mm. And the bronze level is at 60%. It's expected that kind of plan would cover 60% of the average person's healthcare costs. The platinum level goes all the way up to 90%, and the silver and gold are 70 and 80 in between. And so it's just about the amount of healthcare costs that are expected to be covered by the plan. Now, there is one small exception, because young people don't like to buy health insurance. If you're under 30, you get to buy a catastrophic plan. So that doesn't even cover the 60%. Those people are allowed to buy plans that are even more stripped down. So it just keeps you from becoming truly bankrupt as a result of healthcare costs.
In case of an event that is incredibly expensive,
right,
basically.
Exactly.
Bob Kaler.
Although, Sean, this is actually where the states actually have a lot of potential authority to be more or less involved in this process. Because one of the challenges that our states are trying to sort out right now is whether or not to be what it's called an active purchaser, or to take all comers. And the two sort of examples of that continuum are Massachusetts, where they actually are much more aggressive in terms of regulating the plans that are offered through the exchanges. And then what they do is they limit the number. So I think it's 5 in Massachusetts, although I haven't seen those data lately. But then Utah is the other end of the spectrum, where they can have several hundred plans in the plan. And that's where actually, if they follow the basic rules, the plans that are offered to the exchange might actually vary, be above and beyond the 60%, 40%, 20% that Mr. Schwab was talking about, because that's where actually plans might want to market and be more aggressive in terms of the kind of extras that they might throw in to be more attractive to consumers.
So you're saying if states choose to create their own exchanges, there's room for flexibility, room for, in some cases, innovation in terms of the products that are offered on the exchange.
Absolutely.
Bob Kaler.
I just want to check one of my impressions with the experts who are available today. I've had the idea that this is quickly going to become the place to buy health insurance unless you have a high-quality company plan, because there's going to be some level of subsidy available up to 400% of the poverty level. And I think that would include around 80%, maybe 85% of the people in the country. Any of you, is that reasonable to say?
Yeah, Representative Lehman.
And I think it goes back to my first comment when I talked about the government involvement. They're right. This is not a government plan, but with the subsidies, it becomes a government plan, in my opinion. And that is, when you take up to 400% subsidy, potentially, it is going to be detrimental, you might say, to the given today standard market. So I think it's an adverse competition. I think we're creating a level that is going to have an advantage over, like, for example, I can go to the exchange and I can buy a plan that maybe Anthem offers. And if I meet that criteria when it comes to the federal poverty level, I'm actually buying that same product cheaper there than I would be through a broker or through an agent. And as an insurance guy, you know, we've seen a huge impact just in the short period of time it's been effective on the insurance market in Indiana, both with rates going up and with carriers struggling to hit the medical loss ratios and things like that. So I do think it as much as it is another option, and it's an option that is going to have a lot of, you know, some benefits to it, I think the key thing is going to be that the eligibility for the subsidies.
Abe Schwab.
I mean, I would also say one of the reasons that may happen less than it might initially appear is because if the business doesn't actually provide adequate plans for their employees, then they end up with the sticks of the ACA or Obamacare, which are penalties for not providing adequate care. And so if an individual is working for a business and that business doesn't provide better care than is available, good enough care, and so they want to go to the exchange, and the business is going to be possibly subject to one of the sticks. Additionally, the other point is that when I go to the exchange, it's not clear yet that my employer is going to be able to just pay, I could just take the money they pay for my insurance they buy and apply it to the exchange. So for example, I just went through open enrollment at IPFW and they pay like 75. Purdue, who writes our checks, pays about 75% of the cost of the healthcare plan I'm involved in. So then similar products, I would have to pay a lot more out of pocket on the exchange than I would through my employer.
My impression at this stage is, and I feel like I have to hedge every word I speak about this, is that there are two criteria. Either if your company doesn't offer the equivalent of a bronze plan or better, 60% of what you expect to incur, you're eligible to buy in the exchange, or if it would, or if your portion of the premium would be more than 9.5% of your income, you'd be eligible. And as I say that, I want to touch on this this issue of the sticks that would help force businesses to continue providing insurance. My understanding of them, they don't sound like very tough sticks. Is there the penalty that a business would pay would be, I've seen numbers ranging from $2,000 to $3,500 per full-time employee or eligible employee that they don't provide coverage for. And if you're providing, unless you're providing an absolutely skeletal health plan for your employees, that's probably less than you're going to be paying for to insure, for provide family insurance, at least. That may be a reasonable contribution on an individual plan, but Matt, that's your line of work. Maybe you can give me a better insight on that.
No, I think you're dead on, Bob. I was at a I was at a meeting for some business owners, and what I heard from them is this literally will come down to a business decision. And that is, I will have to weigh what is my penalty, what is that stick, versus what I'm paying for benefits. And if the benefits are more than the stick, I may be forced to take the stick. I mean, and especially in these times when I'm hearing, you know, very low profit margins, and you know, if this is anywhere near what the increases I'm hearing are coming potentially with healthcare, I think you're going to see some businesses simply bail and take the penalty. And I agree. I don't think it's much of a stick. I mean, I think you look at some of those numbers; those are pretty minor fines. I'm not advocating they'd be higher. I'm just saying, by no means am I advocating that. I'm just saying that the bill does not incentivize an industry or business to keep health insurance. It really doesn't.
Eric Wright, I want you to jump in on this. Is enforcement difficult, impossible? Are the sticks too small?
I think actually there's some concern that the sticks may be too small, although I will note that they're much larger than they were in Massachusetts when they actually began implementing this plan, which some people, they have not had the pattern of behavior where employers are getting out of the health insurance business to the extent that I think some people are afraid, and those penalties were a lot lower. And that's partly because the incentives here are more convoluted than immediately appears based on the Affordable Care Act, and that's because a lot of businesses actually don't have to pay taxes on health benefits that they provide to their employees. So it's not simply a question of looking at the incentives that are built into the law, but also looking at the tax benefits that they actually have by providing health insurance benefits. So the employers that I've spoken with actually say it's a much more complicated formula, and they are going to have to make some, you know, strategic decisions. It's also related to what the states, individual states, choose to do to implement the law. This is where, in fact, we get into what's happening within the state of Indiana, because many of the states have been very proactive in trying to sort through those issues with employers to try and keep them in the insurance business. But the larger point that can't be lost here is that one of the core problems that the Affordable Care Act is trying to address is not only the issue of who doesn't have health insurance, but a bigger problem that seems to be growing exponentially, and that is the people who are underinsured. And that's in part because employers, in an effort to save money, have actually worked with their insurance coverage to change the quality of the coverage that's provided. And so we have a lot of Americans, some estimated to be as large as the number of uninsured Americans, who actually have policies that are wholly inadequate for protecting them against the catastrophic risks. which is one of the reasons you see more and more people declaring bankruptcy because of medical reasons, and because the majority of those people actually, ironically, have health insurance. And so one of the problems is in trying to sort of stabilize the health insurance market is to give everybody a guaranteed minimum benefit package, if you will, and trying to figure out how to finance that without having a mass exodus of employers from providing health insurance, but also trying to make it affordable. So there's multiple problems that are trying to be addressed with this policy model.
Abe Schwab?
So one, and to follow that point, one of the features of the plans that are supposed to be offered through the exchange is that there's going to be a maximum out of pocket, no matter which level one chooses. So the whatever percentage of the expected cost the plan covers, there's also then a max out of pocket that is supposed to solve that I think is intended to solve exactly this problem of the catastrophic event leading to an individual having to declare bankruptcy. Because even if you cover only 60% or 50% or 70% of the expected costs, but then you end up having a year where there's a lot of costs, there's still going to be this level of there, you're not going to pay more than this amount for healthcare this year, and then after that, whatever insurance you have covers the rest.
We're talking health insurance exchanges on today's Midday Matters, and we do want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment for our panelists, do give us a call. The number is 260-452-1185. Of course, you can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm or get in touch with us via social media. We need to take a quick break. We'll continue the discussion when we get back. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, we meet Irfan Khan. He stars in the new movie Life of Pi, directed by Ang Lee, and based on the best-selling novel of the same name. Khan also starred in Slumdog Millionaire, The Namesake, A Mighty Heart, and as a patient named Sunil in the HBO series In Treatment. He's also appeared in over 30 Bollywood films. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
This week on American Roots, El Sabor Latino in American music. From the West Coast, it's Mexican-American rockers Los Lobos. To the East Coast, salsa of Oscar Hernandez and the Spanish Harlem Orchestra. Plus a performance by San Antonio's queen of conjunto accordion, Eva Ibarra. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Monday night at 7 on WBOI.
It used to be that late-night TV was the only way to make it big in comedy, but the internet has changed everything.
That's what's needed right now.
Producer Walter Latham has set his sights on YouTube.
When internet does become television, which it will, we will already have the formula for success.
A Brave New World in Comedy, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne in fall 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum at www.indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
It's 12:25, and you're tuned to Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler, for this hour of the program, and we're talking about health insurance exchanges and how Hoosier Healthcare will be changed by them. Joining us in the studio, it's State Representative Matt Lehman. Mr. Lehman, also in the insurance business, although not the health insurance business.
No.
With us as well, IPFW medical ethicist Abe Schwab. And joining us by phone, it's Director of the Center for Health Policy at IUPUI, Eric Wright. Gentlemen, thank you all very much for being with us here. We were talking before the break about how businesses will react to the exchanges getting set up. Abe Schwab, you brought up a good point about business is using, you know, health insurance as incentive.
Right. So one of the points we were talking about was that the stick isn't particularly large and maybe too small in terms of the fine that a business would get for not providing insurance. And one of the reasons a business might still provide insurance, whether or not the stick is too small, is that it could be a way to attract workers or keep workers, right, employees, because if they're providing health insurance, they actually can provide the employee sees more benefit for the dollar for the benefits provided than they do in salary. Because if you were given $10,000 in salary as an employee, you would get about $6,200. Whereas $10,000, because of the tax break in benefits for healthcare, you see $10,000 worth of benefits. So even though the stick is small, that might be one reason that employers still want to keep providing insurance.
And in fact, that's kind of this whole story coming full circle, in that employer-provided health insurance was really a way for businesses originally to attract and keep high-quality employees.
Right.
We do want to hear from you today. The number to put a comment or question to our panelists is 260-452-1185. Or you can always call toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Looks like we have a caller on the line here. Let's go to Daniel on line two. Daniel, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Yes, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine. Go ahead.
Great. I posted this on Facebook as well, and I wanted to bring it local to Fort Wayne and Allen County, Northeast Indiana. I'll go ahead and read what I wrote. If I remember correctly, Fort Wayne and Allen County are second only to India as far as being an economic and business center in Indiana. In order for individuals to pay for their required health plan, we're going to need more business, industry, and economic development and jobs in general. So here's perhaps a little bit of a tangent, but I think it might be of interest to the audience. As high-quality jobs will help us pay for our part of the insurance exchange we're talking about, I would like to mention one economic development option that may be available for us in Northeast Indiana. So as Midday Matters talks about current news topics as well, in the news recently, there have been the Legacy Fort Wayne recommendations, to which I pose a little bit of this idea also, and also the question of what to do with the GE campus. So in this idea that I have, I share a vision for an NH3 economy industry cluster. NH3 is anhydrous ammonia, but you've heard of the hydrogen economy, I'd imagine. NH3 economy is a step better. It might work for Northeast Indiana, and I need to get my computer screen back here because it thought I was inactive. Here it is.
Daniel, yeah. I'm sorry, can I interrupt you? I've just found your Facebook post here. It sounds like an idea we can pop into perhaps a future show. Do you have a question about health insurance exchanges, though?
Yeah, just the general question was, how can we work with the folks who are understanding all this to work with the business community and see how to make sure we're generating enough money to pay for our part, be it individuals or businesses. And that was kind of the idea, was how do we make sure our citizens have enough money to pay for what we're going to be required to pay for here.
Sure. Let's put that to the panel. And Daniel, thank you very much for your call.
Yeah. Sure, thank you.
All right. 260-452-1185 is the local line to call if you have a question or comment. Representative Lehman, of course, the cost has been a key concern, not only in the last few months, the last few years, really, since we started talking about healthcare like this, 2008, 2009, 2010.
Well, maybe here would be a good place to take out my stack of I don't knows. I think there's going to be a lot of those. And to one extent is, as we've tried to put a fiscal picture on this, I know you can't always filter everything through a fiscal picture, but as you try to do that, there's just too many, in my opinion, too many unknowns yet. We had hearings back in September, and response we get from HHS on a lot of these issues are, well, the mechanisms in place, but the regulations have not yet been written. And regulations are where the cost comes. And so as we began to put some numbers to this, and you say, okay, all we can really now do is start to put some ranges of numbers. And then what that leads to is well, what if this changes? And so there's too many factors that if you change that, and to the caller's point is, how do we generate more revenue because not only will individuals maybe not be as much responsible for paying that if they're in that exchange under a subsidy, it is how is a state going to pay for that? And that is the debate we're going to have and really discuss is what is going to be that impact if we fully implement the exchange and if we would fully implement the expansion of Medicaid and you put all those factors on the table, you're talking some serious dollars to the taxpayers of Indiana.
And I think a Medicaid show will be in the works in the near future. Of course, lots of a lot of diverse elements to the Affordable Care Act. But Eric writes, of course, the fiscal matters involved here are very complex as well, and still a lot to discuss here in Indiana.
Well, I think that can't be lost on the whole process or the whole conversation, but I think the caller was right to ask the question about sort of, you know, what's the impact on economic development, broadly defined. And I think this is where I think sometimes our legislators, Mr. Lehman perhaps, is, you know, most acutely concerned about what the bottom line is to the state of Indiana's budget. But if you take a much broader economic development perspective, then you also have to begin to ask the question, which I keep hearing, you know, employers talk a lot about, which is the bottom line of healthcare costs to them as businesses. And I've heard the president of Singapore say several times that the only way they feel that many of the Asian nations are following suit, we can compete with the United States, is by having a healthier population and lower healthcare costs. And I think what was the idea, the perhaps the opportunity that's been presented to the states through the Affordable Care Act is for states to figure out a process where they can actually have a conversation with employers about how to organize the exchange, do it in a way that, you know, balances the economic development interests against the need to actually control healthcare spending. That's the long-term problem. And I think, you know, if we continue this as a state or a, you know, business solution, you know, I think that the unfortunate thing is neither group can do it alone, and I think we have to find a new way to do that.
Matt Lehman.
Yeah, I think to that point, and I think Garrett makes a good point, and that is, you know, we're talking about the exchanges today, but one of the factors within this is really the health of our nation, and you think there needs to be a driver to get us to be healthier. I personally do not do health insurance, but our agency does, and we have some people there that are very qualified to do that. And what I'm hearing from them is the marketplace has been moving rapidly towards wellness, and where we have seen the results, where we have seen our clients' premiums drop, has been when they've implemented wellness drivers. And in a sense, I'm a free market person, so I think, you know, rather than maybe the government coming in and saying, well, you'll now fit into this box of wellness and you'll eat this and run every day and do all these things. It's, I think the marketplace drives that already. And they do that through wellness programs. And most of, especially on the high end of policies, are really pushing wellness. And I think to that point, I think, you know, Mitch Daniels was a wellness governor. But we haven't really changed a lot. So even though some of our groups have seen changes, it's hard to push. I think it's just hard to push Americans into wellness. Maybe it's easier in Singapore, but I think in America, you know, show me some evidence where people are overwhelmingly embracing a wellness philosophy. You know, I don't see it in some of the places that I go to eat lunch.
Well, and in fact, Abe Schwab, I mean, when you look at just about any statistic in terms of obesity, heart disease, all these, they do continue to go up, and that could create a very expensive, inexpensive healthcare system as we go forward with the ACA.
Certainly. I mean, one of the ways that I think people may respond, although it's unclear, is by providing them with a nice financial incentive. So there's a nice financial incentive connected to the health plan. Again, I just went through open enrollment. If you don't certify that you're a non-smoker, then you have to pay a premium. And it's a pretty big premium. I mean, smoking is expensive anyway, but then there's a pretty big premium. And so the idea is that, well, if you want to do something that is going to cost us more money, okay, you can make that choice, but we're going to try and tag some costs on to help cover those expenses. And so one way that then you can address these higher costs in all of these areas is to say, okay, well, then we're going to put additional incentives for you to stop, which we can then use to help pay for.
And I guess on that note, one question I'd have would be, in the exchange, is the exchange driven by wellness? Or is the exchange driven more by benefit?
Well, and I think that gets back to the question of how the exchange relates to the businesses and how the exchange relates to the population. And I know that Eric Wright was mentioning over the one of the breaks that one of the things we wanted to talk about a little bit at least is the fact that Mike Pence said on Friday, Governor Pence said on Governor-elect Pence said on Friday that Indiana is not going to run their own exchange. Now, the question of whether or not it's going to be a hybrid is different. Now, it's important to recognize there are three different opportunities, right, for the mm-hmm. exchange. There's the state-run only. There's the hybrid, which the state and federal government interact and work together to run the exchange. And there's the federal government only. And so what has happened is that Indiana said, we're not going to do the state only. The hybrid only, apparently, there is at least some time to make a decision about. And it's also possible that down the line, we could have a state run only. Mm-hmm. But one of the advantages that's been discussed, at least about state run only exchanges, is that then the state can actually have this kind of interaction with business where they can accommodate what local businesses need, what local populations need, in a way that a plan that's organized by the federal government just isn't going to be responsive.
And I want to talk about those options and about how Indiana goes forward more in depth in a few minutes here. We do have a caller on the line, and of course, we do invite you to join us today. The number is 260-452-1185 or 1-800-471-9264. We have, I believe it's Luis on the line. Luis, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi. So it's actually Luis Lopez.
Oh, Luis, excuse me.
I'm a physician here in town, and I'm a cardiologist. And so I was just driving between hospitals and heard the program. So I have not so much a question, but rather a suggestion as a possible healthcare insurance plan for the nation. So my thoughts are that everyone wants universal health care coverage. That's not a tough thing to get people to agree upon. However, nobody wants to pay for it. Everybody wants the health insurance, but wants somebody else to pay or what have you. And so what I would suggest is that everyone born in the United States gets a Social Security number. Everyone born in the United States should then also get a Medicare number. And every person born in the United States automatically gets Medicare, and that's the primary form of insurance that everybody receives. And in order to fund that, we're going to have to establish a Medicare tax. And that Medicare tax is going to be equivalent to whatever the GDP is, the percentage of the GDP that we spend on the healthcare system. And for instance, if it's 10%, then everybody, without exemption, without exclusion, has to pony up a 10% tax on this thing in order to fund it. So if you make a dollar, you're going to pay 10 cents. If you make $100, you're going to pay $10. But one way or another, everyone involved is going to have to pay some money to fund this thing. Now, I heard you guys also talking about incentives for health, and you could build into this system that if you smoke, then you're going to pay 11%. If you are not taking your medications appropriately and so forth, even though they're prescribed for you, then maybe you're going to pay 12%. So you build incentives to encourage compliance with taking their medical therapy and getting their preventative care, and then you can say, what if you exercise regularly and you're at your ideal body weight and you don't smoke and you don't drink? Well, then we'll discount you by 1% or 2%. So there's a built-in financial incentive for everyone to try and adopt healthier lifestyles.
And Lewis, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We have to go to the news in just a moment, so I want to be able to get this to our panelists here. And Eric Wright, we'll start with you. Do you think a plan like this, looking further ahead into the future, might have some legs?
Well, actually, it's not. Do not go further into the future. It actually has been on the Congress in the docket through a particular resolution that has proposed expanding Medicare to all for quite some years. Mm-hmm. It's just never gotten enough political traction, I think, in part because a lot of people see that as a quote-unquote government takeover of health care. It does
And I would say from a doctor's standpoint, it's not really a government takeover of health care because we all do Medicare every day. And there's several advantages to this program that I'm suggesting, one of which is that Medicare runs with a very low administrative cost as compared to a lot of the other insurance plans and so forth. And one of the things that I find offensive is when I see large insurance companies taking a lot of money And even like this whole managed Medicare thing is basically people taking the Medicare dollars and withholding care from the recipients and using that to generate a profit, and that's thought to be some kind of good thing, and that's a terrible thing.
And Lewis, I'm sorry, we're running up against time. I want to get our other panelists in here before we have to take this break. Eric Wright, did you want to finish up there?
Well, I think actually your caller's is an accurate description of sort of the realities of the situation. I think the reason that proposal hasn't gotten any traction is because a lot of people are concerned about the impact on the insurance industry. There are a lot of people who are providers who make a lot of money off the system, and I think it's not should not be forgotten that 20% of our economy is now invested in healthcare, and there are more paid lobbyists on Capitol Hill and in Indianapolis around healthcare than any other single industry. So trying to find some sort of solution to balance these economic interests that are heavily vested and funded is going to be a big challenge, but my prediction is actually we may come back to that proposal if, in fact, health exchange and the Affordable Care Act is not properly implemented, because it will not reduce health care costs in the long run until we do something more severe. And if we can't do it under the Affordable Care Act, we may end up coming back to the Medicare for All proposal.
I want to get Matt Lehman and Abe Schwab's thoughts in just a moment here. Unfortunately, we have to take a break for the news and for some underwriting. Do stay with us. This is Midday Matters.
It used to be that late-night TV was the only way to make it big in comedy, but the internet has changed everything.
That's what's needed right now.
Producer Walter Latham has set his sights on YouTube.
When internet does become television, which it will, we will already have the formula for success.
A Brave New World in Comedy, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah DeLeo with WBOI News. Hundreds of mourners filled a northeastern Indiana church for the funeral of a Fort Wayne volunteer firefighter killed when his tanker truck overturned. An Allen County church was filled with some 1,000 people during Saturday's service for 26-year-old Mark Hoddenschild II. The volunteer firefighter for the Washington Township Fire Department died November 11th when he was thrown from his tanker truck after he lost control of it while en route to a brush fire. During his funeral service, a fire official presented Hoddenschild's widow, Janet, with his fire helmet. Following the service, Hoddenschild's casket was placed on his Washington Township fire truck and taken to Riverview Cemetery in Cherubusco for his burial service. Political leaders and alcohol distributors are putting the spotlight on Indiana's new Lifeline Amnesty Law ahead of the approaching holidays. The law is meant to encourage underage Hoosiers to take action if a friend drinks too much. If those friends call 911 to summon emergency help and cooperate with the police, they'll be immune from prosecution. State Senator Jim Merritt, State Representative Jed McMillan, and Attorney General Greg Zeller are spreading the word about the law they say can help prevent alcohol poisoning deaths among young people. The law was passed this year with help from student leaders at Indiana's universities. Monarch Beverages and the Indiana Association of Beverages are distributing 100,000 flyers to alcohol retailers to promote the law. The Fort Wayne Comets played twice on home ice this past weekend. WBOY's Doug Gruber has the result.
Friday night against Toledo, the Comets were never in the game, but they also were never out of it. Scoreless in the second period, the K's Daniel Maggio was assessed penalties for tripping, cross-checking, and received a game misconduct. That put the Comets a man short for 7 minutes. They killed the penalty through the second period, but Toledo broke the scoreless tie 52 seconds into the third period. Down 2-0 with 2 minutes remaining in the game, the Comets' Colin Chalk got the K's first goal, but they couldn't get the tying goal, and Toledo wins 2-1. Saturday night against Evansville, who they'd beaten three times this season, the Icemen took a 1-0 lead in the first period, went up 2-0 on a second-period power play goal. There was no comeback by the Comets this time. In fact, it got worse when in the final 4 minutes, Evansville scored 2 shorthanded goals in 38 seconds, down the Comets 5-0. It was, as Comets coach Al Sims called it, an embarrassing loss. After winning 5 in a row, the Comets have now lost 3 in a row and have been outscored 13-3. They'll try to break the losing streak Thanksgiving night when they host the Kalamazoo Wings at 7:30. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
You're listening to 89.1 FM WBOI. And now back to Midday Matters.
A quarter till 1 o'clock. It's Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter along with Bob Kaler. And during this hour of the program, we're talking about health insurance exchanges and how they'll change the face of healthcare in Indiana. We do want to hear from you today in the last few minutes of the program. The number, if you have a question or comment, is 260-452-1185. Or you can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Of course, you can always email middaymatters at nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. We are at Midday Matters. And we had a question from Lewis before we had to go to the break there. And I know, Representative Lehman, you wanted to jump in on that briefly.
Yeah, I think what I wanted to maybe comment, and maybe it goes to the comment Eric made, I do believe that a Medicare, 100% Medicare plan for everyone is a takeover of government from the standpoint of healthcare. I say that from the standpoint, everybody looks at the insurance industry as the problem in this mix, yet the insurance industry employs a lot of people. They're a huge portion of the economy, and I think to simply discount them and say, well, they're the problem, and I was telling Abe before we came on today, you know, there's many parts of this pie that need to be examined, and one is, you know, healthcare costs have not come down. You know, if the intent of the Affordable Care Act was to make it affordable care, all we've addressed is the mechanism of how we pay for it. We've not addressed the affordable care. And I think that goes to the unknowns yet as to the cost of all of this. We just don't know what that cost is going to be. And I think, you know, you can say, well, let's go to a Medicare tax for everyone. I'll guarantee you there'll be people exempted from that tax. So if you want to set it at 10%, someday yours will be 15 or 20%, and it's going to be the same thing we have with income tax. You know, certain levels will be exempt, and everyone else is going to bear the cost of that. And I don't think it's sustainable, to be honest, not with a $16 trillion debt, which is a whole other program.
and one I imagine we'll be exploring in the coming weeks here. Abe Schwab, briefly, a response to Lewis's point.
I mean, for me, it just becomes a question of what you can do given the system that you're operating in. So whether or not that's a long-term objective, I take it to be generally a bad idea to just sort of come up with an idea and then force it on without paying any attention to the system that's in place. So while there's maybe people who would be critical of it, one of the ways that the Affordable Care Act works is that it works within the existing employer-based health coverage system and sort of supplements that rather than trying to just start from scratch and pretend like that doesn't exist already. Maybe Medicare will come back up again later. Medicare for All will come back up again later. But for now, this is at least a step towards insurance for everyone.
All right. Lewis, we appreciate your question. And we invite our listeners to join us, of course, 260-452-1185 or 1-800-471-9264. Very briefly here, we have a caller on the line. Then we want to get to the news of the day, of course, how Indiana will move forward with its health insurance exchange. Before that, though, we have Jerry on the line. Jerry, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I'd like to speak to you about the insurance companies.
Briefly, please. Go ahead.
I think that Medicare should be for everybody. Everybody, included newborns. And insurance companies are only in for profit. That's all they're in there for. It's profit. And you've got to have non-profit insurance companies or it never will work. Thank you.
Jerry, we appreciate your call. Have a good day. Thank you. Right. Bye-bye. 260-452-1185 or 1-800-471-9264. Of course, Abe Schwab, a lot of folks very passionate about not just the exchanges, but the many facets of the ACA.
Yeah, I mean, it's It's a complicated, I mean, it's really complicated about how to balance the sets of interests that are at play here, because there's a way in which I think that, you know, we do have to keep in mind that there are a lot of people who are employed within the health insurance industry. But then at the same time, if we're talking about cutting costs for healthcare in general, then that's going to be one of the areas that has to be looked at. And so I think there's always a question of efficiency, but then there's also the question of what is our healthcare system aimed at? And if, you know, it seems very plausible that we should have a healthcare system, I would actually endorse a healthcare system that aimed at providing basic level of healthcare for everyone. I don't know that Medicare for All is the answer to that question, but that should be the direction. The question is, what are the appropriate strategies to achieve that?
Eric Wright, I want to go to you. Of course, the big news that we've been tracking over the last several days, a few weeks really, is how Indiana is going to approach this system. As I understand it, we had passed the initial deadline to tell the federal government whether or not Indiana was going to set up and run its own health insurance exchange. That deadline has been extended now. Can you give us the latest on where we stand as a state?
Well, based on what I know, is I've heard that the original deadline was November 16th. For states to notify the federal government about whether they're not going to set up a state exchange and whether or not they're going to continue to sort of try a new partnership. And then they had some extensions given right after the election to explain how they're going to do that. And then late on Friday, Secretary Sebelius said you can have until December 14th to make this decision. I think that's recognizing that a lot of state houses have changed over and there's been a lot of change in administrations. But Pence apparently did send a letter, according to Star reporters that I spoke with last week, to inform them that we would not be setting up a state insurance exchange and that we would opt in for the 2014 to be part of the federal exchange. So that's what I know.
And Representative Lehman, of course, that means there's a lot for everyone in Hoosier government to think about going forward here over the next several weeks and months.
Yeah, we do. And I think, as like I said, we've heard testimony through several hearings. You know, personally, I think that nothing should be taken completely off the table, and I don't think that has happened. But I do think, a hybrid look to be a workable option. A lot of it just even comes down to the nuts and bolts of it from the standpoint of the controls. You know, I'm a state person. I don't like the idea that we're ceding all that control over to the federal government to write the exchange, write all the regulations for the exchange, and then operate the exchange for Hoosiers. But again, it comes back to, in my stack of I don't knows, I just don't know that we have enough information to really establish an exchange and then know how to run it. As Abe said earlier, we've been given this charge with very little or no regulations in place.
Bob Kaler.
I'm having trouble picturing how you would have a hybrid of state and federal control of a health exchange. Either one of you guys or any of you guys have some information on that, models in other states.
I'm going to borrow one of his I don't know cards.
It's got to be a big stack.
It is a big stack, and we're down to four or five left. I think all I've seen in that modeling is it's kind of in a nutshell. You can say it this way: if the feds take it, then you know we lose some funding for that, but they control it, and they operate it. If we go the opposite end, you know, we pay for it, we regulate it, we control it, we get some federal money through 14. The median then says, let's work together on finding something. Maybe some of your control, some of our control, some of your money, some of our money. That I think is where a lot of states have asked, can you take us there? We want to end up there. And I think the initial response from the feds was, no, you know, you got two choices, and I think the middle ground has gained a lot of momentum. I still think, you know, to play a couple of my last I don't know cards, even in that system we don't know, and so I think it was left with Governor Pence making a decision to say, until we know more, and the fact that we can't opt back in. If it was once you're out, you're out, then I think that decision would be a lot more difficult and had a lot more people involved. But I think the fact that we can get back in. Is why the door's still open, so let's move in that direction.
And you're saying that we could choose, as a state, could choose a federal system right now and then eventually transition into a state-run exchange.
And maybe Eric would know more. I do believe it's a one-year notification to say we want to run our own exchange, and we'd set up our own in that meantime. But, you know, and again, I think it's been said throughout this from everybody, it really is about the dollars. I mean, it's about the funding. I mean, really, you know, the funding's going out here. It's going to run out there. This is when we use our money. This is when we use their money. You know, it's our money, you know, in the big picture. But at some point, it is going to come down to the funding mechanism.
Abe Schwamm.
And one of the issues about the funding mechanism that we've talked about a little bit in the break is that on January 1, 2015, the exchange is going to no longer receive federal funding as the ACA was originally written. And so that means that the funding for the exchange is going to have to come from elsewhere. And it's not identified exactly where that is. So that could be something where Indiana would decide to fund it through taxes. They could say that insurers who are going to be on the exchange could be charged a surcharge to cover the costs, or the individual consumers and the small businesses who use the exchange could also be. And so that leaves an open question. And it's also unclear if we don't back in, if Indiana doesn't back in, does the federal government then just get to decide how that funding is going to work out, where that money is going to come from? And so these are sort of important questions about having some control over how the exchange is going to go moving forward.
Matt Lehman.
And I guess one of the things that I guess if you want to say that has I've kind of seen as the government playing their hand a little bit is, and my fear is we've simply asked for some buy-in. You know, if you're going to go in and you're going to be fully subsidized, or even I know Medicaid's another issue, we want to see a buy-in. There were 26 or 27 preventative care issues that were brought forth, and you must include these in your essential benefits with no copay, no deductible. It's going to be very difficult to continue to provide those kind of services and not ask for some buy-in. And so, again, from a pure cost standpoint, is I don't know how this is going to be sustained, is if we look and say we want to get in, we want to have these in the exchange, and we're going to ask the consumer to help compensate us for some of this, if we're handcuffed to do that, then it is going to be simply on the taxpayer's back.
Eric Wright, Indiana is not really the only state that is in this position. There are a number of states who are still figuring this out. Was this a kind of a policy failing when the ACA was put together that, you know, we would be in this electoral transition period and, you know, that states would not necessarily have the time to figure out how to run these exchanges on a state level?
Well, I mean, there's lots of failings in most legislation that's passed.
Bigger than the I don't know card stack.
I think the thing that's probably most surprising to most people is, like, I think there were really two versions of this bill. One was to do it out totally at the federal level, which was the House version of the bill, and then the other one was to push it to the states, which was the Senate version of the bill, which is what won the day. And I think what's kind of surprising to a lot of people is, I mean, the economists would tell you doing this at the federal level would be technically the economically most efficient way of doing it, because you'd have the largest pools, the least administrative costs, et cetera, which is why we're talking about Medicare for All a lot. But the disadvantage is, in fact, that by giving it to the states, then would you create a new advantage, which is for states to tailor it to their specific needs and address some of those larger larger health questions that Abe was referring to. And I think this is what's kind of been surprising to those of us who are sort of watching this process unfold, is the feds really do not want to do this. They really want, because they want to follow the spirit of the law, which is to enable states to actually do health reform. And what's happening is a great, what I'm always referred to as a game of kick the can. The states don't want to do it now, so they're pushing it back to the feds. The feds are trying to get the states to do that. And I think what we're going to end up is somewhere, as Matt was alluding to, in some sort of partnership model. But this is where, and this probably is a good segue to your next show, this decision should not be made in isolation of the decision about Medicaid, because the entire premise of the Affordable Care Act was that Medicaid would shore up the bottom end of the economic spectrum and the Affordable Care Act would take care of the middle. And if you don't do one without the other, then you undermine the architecture of the Affordable Care Act, flawed as it may be. It does have a model for doing that. And if you start tinkering around with some of the assumptions, that makes all the cost estimates that everybody wants to have much more difficult to discern.
Eric Wright, we're going to have to leave it there. That was a great transition to our next show, and we'll be hitting this topic many more times to come here. Eric Wright, Matt Lehman, Abe Schwamm, thank you all so much for being with us. Bob, thank you as well. And thanks to our listeners. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, WBOY Fort Wayne. The time is 1 o'clock.